For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank, the number one sperm bank in the U.S. Use code LOVEISLOVE at cryobank.com for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Do it now.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Meeting was very interesting. Right. So the first phone call that we had, they asked us all the questions that I would ask to a straight couple that's having trouble to conceive. So one of the questions was, how long have you been trying to conceive?
Oh my God. Since we met. Yeah. Since that first night. That? Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all. The show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I'm your gay host. And this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA plus families. And y'all, don't we need that right now? Whew, seems like everywhere you turn, there's a bad headline. I feel like I am a broken record with this. Seems every day it's a new barrage of things coming at our community. And so today's episode is a lighthearted one that's going to give you some good feels. I thought that was important for all of us right now. I got to sit with Sophie and Anyese over in London about their baby-making journey, and it's going to give you some feelings. It really is. It's such a beautiful testament to queer relationships and how folks with two uteruses can use that to their advantage. That's all I'm going to say there. There are some pivots along the way. It's not a straightforward journey. None of them ever are. Thank God. No, I shouldn't even say the word straight. But man, does it turn out beautiful. So I'm really excited for you to hear their story. And there's a little sperm shipment fiasco. Okay, that's it. I'm not going to say anymore. I don't know why I keep going into it. It's gorgeous. And I just want to get to rolling this tape. I do want to let you know that there was construction happening in my building while I recorded this particular interview. My son, both my children are actually homesick right now, y'all. Both of them. What are the chances? 2 days in a row. Fun. Fun for me. But my son happened to be coughing in the room next to where I was recording. So I'm hoping Gerson, my editor, is able to do something with the coughs, but you might hear some little 7-year-old coughs, and just know everybody's fine. And we're all going to make it through and let this conversation that is about to come at you be a testament to the resilience of queer folks. We got this, y'all. We're going to make it through. We got this. I love you. Enjoy the episode. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Helen, Beulah, they're sitting with Orion. They're cuddling with him right now. They're not real. But if they were, they would be doing that. Please, Gerson, roll that tape. Thank you very much.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Sophia and Anyese.
Hi. Hi.
It is wonderful to have you here. And I just butchered Anyese, your name, once, and I am not going to do it again because it's such a beautiful name. So I'm going to say your name like 20 times throughout this episode, just so it's ingrained in my mind. It's a beautiful name. It's an Italian name, correct?
Yes, it is.
Tell us at home where you're zooming in from, so to speak.
We're coming in from London, yeah. England.
Oh my God, this is amazing. We are across the pond, yeah, as they say. And I love that this little show extends to those of you across the pond. Your listeners, you know the show.
Yeah.
And okay, so Sophia wrote this beautiful email to me, all you listeners at home, and I was like, oh my God, come, I need to hear this story. You lay out so beautifully, you know, like how you came to the show and like what it meant. So I just would love to hear that from you too.
Well, I started like just doing research about fertility. During lockdown, it started. We weren't even thinking about trying then. I think I was just like, how does it work as a queer couple?
Uh-huh.
And then started like looking for podcasts. This was probably like this was before we started trying. Yeah. So 2 or 3 years ago. And everything was so like heteronormative. And I was like, this doesn't fit. So I was just Googling like gay, queer, like podcasts and stumbled across the Queer Family Podcast. And I was like, oh, this fits.
Yes, I'm so glad that the Google worked for you, because I don't know if I show up in searches. So that's really
wonderful to hear.
You do. Yeah. Even over there in London. So that makes me happy. And also slightly angry that there aren't more of us yet.
No, but it's wonderful that this is. And then, yeah, introduced you to when we were driving across from London to Rome. We drove for Christmas 1 year. And we listened to you or your podcast like almost the entire way.
3 days of driving. Yeah. And so, I drive.
Yeah, I don't drive. It's just you driving.
Princess. So she picked what we were listening to, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
So. Oh, good. And you say, I apologize that you had to listen to my voice that long, but I hope you got some good stories out of it. It's time for the elevator pitch. I need the guests to know. They know a little bit already, but let's do it the right way. It's time for a 30-second elevator pitch. I'd like to know who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your marks, get set, go.
Hi, this is Sophie Nanyeze. We are calling in from London. We have been together for 6 years, married for two. We have this little lovely family that we set up. We have a little dog called Rainbow. They're sitting next to us. And a little baby on the way, 21 weeks.
Yeah.
I work in tech, and Sophie is the really cool one that works in film. She's a casting agent. And we're really glad to be here with you.
Boom. You did it. And I feel like you even like filled some time, like you had extra time. So good job. That was amazing. Did you practice that?
I work in tech sales. So kind of.
Perfect. I love it. So congratulations. 21 weeks, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're really in a good place now, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Settled into it a bit.
Did you do the body scan already? The 20-week scan?
Yeah, the full scan. Yeah.
I feel like once you get past that, it feels like, okay, all right, we can really count on this, you know, knock wood and all the things. But I'm very excited for you. And I know it was a journey to get here. So let's delve in. You've been together for 6 years. Can you give us a quick little story on how you met and, you know, how all that went down?
We met on Hinge. Well, it had just started, actually. Like, I don't think it had been out that long. Dating apps now, I hear, aren't so great. But that, yeah, it was good back then. And we went on a date. And yeah, kind of just, it lasted a long time. It lasted 6 years.
It was a U-Haul. It was a date that never ended. I had one of those. I'm still married. That's amazing. Were you both living that gay life before you met?
Yeah, we were. But I just moved to the UK, kind of. I was 6 months in. So I was figuring it out over here because it's a bit different. Like Rome is much smaller community. Uh-huh. You know, you meet all the people are always in the same places.
You know everyone there, don't you?
Yeah, London seems like all completely new. I had to figure everything out. And then, yeah, that's why Hinge was good.
Interesting. I didn't know that Rome had such a small, I don't want to say small town vibe, but I didn't know it was so tight.
Yeah, so we literally have like areas of the city or specific, you know, bars or clubs that you will hang out in. I feel like it's like that everywhere, but there is literally one road in front of the Colosseum that is the place where everyone meets.
That
makes it sound very nice.
It is beautiful, actually.
That sounds beautiful. Listen, I need to know where it is whenever I get to Rome. If I ever get there, I go there in front of that part of the Colosseum. I've been wondering this because I did also interview a gay dad in Italy. He's not in Rome. Just about the difficulties that he's faced with doing the surrogacy route. And then also in Italy, they were taking away the non-bio parents' parental rights. So I don't know if you know much about that or if you want to go into that at all and just kind of growing up there. And I don't know, you know, it's up to you.
Definitely. It's a beautiful country and people are very nice. There is a weird push from government and probably all the institutions that are prominent in the country to push down on anything that isn't conforming to whatever they think rules need to be, traditional family and everything that they consider that. I mean, growing up, my family was amazing. I came out to my mum, I think, when I was 13.
Yeah, you're very
And she just told me, I think when I came out to her, I said, Mom, I like women. And she said, they're cool girls at your age, but that's okay. But, you know, having that made it a bit easier. You know, when you, even if you're in a place where sometimes it seems like you stick out and the world is a bit against you, knowing that you got that solid foundation of family around you that always accepts you is what got me through that. But I moved to England a bit for that as well. I always knew I wanted a family. And it's easier, I had the feeling that it was going to be even harder over there.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I really wanted to delve into that just because, you know, us over here in the States are dealing with something that feels adjacent to, like, they want us to go even further than even Italy is in regards to the traditional family values. And
it's scary.
Very scary. Very scary. So what I do want to take home from it also, and what I've noticed with actually you and Yese and also the other guy I interviewed who's coming up soon, the resilience and also just the, nope, I did it anyway. And my family loves me and I have a huge support system and same thing, right? So the resilience of our community to continue to thrive, we will find ways. So I wanted to highlight that. And I think that that's just freaking beautiful. And, you know, here we go. Let's go. We're game on, babies.
Yeah.
But you did say, and you say that you always wanted to have a family. And I'd love to hear that kind of about that from both of you. Did you both always think that a family was on the table? And what was the conversation surrounding that? When did you two bring it up together? All these things.
On our first date, probably.
Yep, that's how we do.
Honest, like, I'm sure about everything. But you're the one that was really, like, adamant. I think I was very much like, if I find the right person, it was very much, if I find the right person to parent with. But you were very... You knew what you wanted.
You knew.
So yeah, I think I knew when I met you, I was like, yeah, I want a parent with you. It could be fun.
And it's going to be. It's going to be amazing and also super hard. But we don't have to go there yet.
No.
I don't want to hear it.
No. We're in denial.
That's the only thing I'll say. I have two children homesick from school right now. That's it. I'm going to zip my mouth now. That's amazing. And a lot of times, you know, because your listeners, I ask this question all the time, because in many of our cases, that conversation comes up usually on the first date or close to it, just because we know that there's going to have to be a lot that goes into this family making journey. And also many of us have already, like, figured out how we want to do it by the time we're 13. And then we have to get on the same page. So what was the conversation surrounding how you would do it?
I think Sophie's the type of person that needs to do research.
Yeah.
So I was a bit like, let's wing it. We'll find a place. We'll just do it. But thank God you're that kind of person.
I was like, let's organize this. Let's figure out how we do it. I was like, I'm older. So I was like, it should probably be my older eggs first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were looking into reciprocal, but that was so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I did lots of research into just, like, because obviously we've got the NHS here.
Yeah.
How much we could get on the NHS. And because I'd done so much research, I knew that we could get quite a lot up until actually IUI trying. So we decided to start with IUI with me instead of jumping straight to reciprocal.
There's a lot that you learned in all of your research, Sophie, that I really want to go into. But before we do that, did you know you want to have more than one child? Is that why you said you were going to go first?
Yes, yeah. We ideally wanted one each or two, however it works.
So you both want to carry?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that's how my wife and I were. Which you know, it's not the easiest way for us to go. It's usually a lot easier when, you know, when there's two people with two wombs, when one of them is like, nope, no desire, all you.
But it's more expensive, isn't it, to do it twice?
Right, exactly. And you know, you got two journeys ahead of you or possibly reciprocal, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so take us down the path. Take us down the road. You started doing your research and what did you find out? Because it could be really helpful, as you said in your email, Sophie, for folks living where you live or with NHS, which we don't have, which is so sad.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky, I think, to have it. Yeah. So the research I found, if you go to your GP, they didn't know anything at all. Mm-hmm. So I'd done the research and I was like, so you need to send me to this hospital. I want to go to this one. And they did. They came back and were like, okay, we've done a referral for you. But wow. They didn't have a clue. I had to be like, that's what I want to do. And then we had a meeting. It was quite quick. It was probably like 6 weeks after.
The meeting was very interesting. Wow. So the first phone call that we had, they asked us all the questions that I would ask to a straight couple that's having trouble to conceive. Yeah. So one of the questions was, how long have you been trying to conceive?
Oh, my God. Since we met.
But they did manage to give us a referral to the right hospital. And then there's also like some particular rules. So the NHS is a national health system, but it's divided in different regions.
It's called
and
ICBs, integrated care boards, they're called. And they distribute the fertility funding. So there's like little pots that they
distribute. I have heard this from another guest. Yes. So depending on what pod you're in, basically, right?
Yeah, that dictates how much help you get.
So you could, depending on where you're living, it's like a postcode lottery kind of situation where you might be in an area where you need to fund less to get more free.
Yeah.
So it's normally based on a number of attempts.
So you have to do IUI first and you have to pay for IUI. And in some areas, we were really lucky. It was three IUIs we had to self-fund. But some friends of ours, it was 12 IUIs they had to self-fund.
Oh. And it so just like, really depends on where you are in the city.
Yeah, and you could live down the road. It could just be a different road, different postcode. It's a different board.
Oh, wow.
So we were just very lucky.
So for you, it was three.
It was three. And we found that out, I think, a bit later into the journey.
Yeah, we found it out when we went into the hospital because we still didn't know who we're going to be and
who you're under. And you can't find any of this information online. It's really difficult because I don't know what it's just hard to find how much.
There'll be something really good to set up for everyone. Yeah. A website.
Which I'm sure it says.
And yes, so you're in tech, right?
Yeah, you should get
put that on your, I keep
there,
giving
there you
things
go.
To do.
There it is. Get on that.
And again, here there's another, and I know that I keep going on this, but there's another difference and is another barrier that they put in front of gay couple trying to conceive, mm-hmm. is that if you are a straight couple going through this, you just need to prove that you've been trying to conceive for a year and you get straight access to all the funding.
And you don't need to go through the IUI process.
No.
Bias.
So yeah, and they don't also, some ICBs don't count at home tries, so you could be using a known donor at home and have been trying for 2 years and actually have fertility issues, but you still need to fund the IUIs because they don't count it.
Oh wow, that's annoying. And how much is an IUI like in a clinic?
£1,200.
It's not cheap.
No.
And, I mean, nothing is.
And then the sperm.
Right. Yeah.
Which is the expensive one. I also had a high cozy that was funded by the NHS, which...
A high cozy?
Yeah, so that's where they check whether your tubes are blocked or not.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Lots of people don't know you can get
so
that
technical
on
this show. I know all the medical terms. I had that done to me too, and so I should
not.
Go
very
ahead.
Nice. Okay. I wouldn't recommend it, but yeah,
it didn't hurt me. It didn't bother me, but you had a blocked tube, so that probably was.
Yeah, it was so. It was not great fun.
Yeah,
but yeah, luckily didn't have to pay for that either.
Oh, okay, that's good. So helpful, but also still biased against.
Yes.
Queer folks, for sure.
Yeah.
100%.
But lots of people don't know you can get up to IUI funded. So lots of people do go and pay for all of these things as well.
Oh, because they don't do the research. And the doctors don't know.
No, they say
because you have to go to the specific hospital that knows this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like a video game. It's like one of those video games that you can't figure out where you're supposed to go. Like, you need to find the special...
The levels.
Get to different levels.
Like, that special room that you're like, where the hell is this room? It's like that. It's all hidden and covert.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's frustrating. So, sperm. Let's talk donors.
Oh, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun for a few reasons. So first of all, we're like, oh, what donor are we going to pick? What are they going to look like? What are the things that we're going to prioritize? And we found that weirdly, apparently, there's not a lot of Italian
donors. No, Italians donors. Don't want to donate their sperm.
Maybe it's something really? Like being attached to their genes. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it's something ingrained in Italy, like with the traditional values. And I don't know. Maybe it's just not on their radar to donate.
Yeah, or maybe it's, again, I think because it's not something that happens a lot in Italy.
It's not legal in Italy to do.
I think that it's really everyone that has fertility treatment does it abroad.
Right.
Most of it is fertility treatment to aid couples.
You can't have fertility treatment in Italy if you're gay.
Right. Yeah, no. You can't even be a single parent.
No,
because that's the Giuseppe. That's who I talked to. He had to travel to the States.
They probably don't have a big need for donor sperm then.
Don't have a sperm bank, Italian sperm bank.
No. Right. So what about yours? What sperm bank? Like, where did you use an international sperm bank?
We did originally. We used an American bank because you could see the photos and we wanted, and we also needed to buy enough sperm to cover both of us. So we needed to buy the 8 vials for 3 IUIs and 1 round of IVF for each of us.
Right. And that's like hoping that it all goes the way it's supposed to go.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a bit luck of the draw. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you bought 8 vials.
Bought 8 vials. Interestingly, as soon as we bought it, I had this like anxiety. I was like, it's the wrong one. And we just dropped all this money on this sperm. And I was like in bed, like, this is, it's the wrong one. It's the wrong one. And there's no refunds. And I was like, it feels like the biggest decision you're going to make ever.
I know. It's a search for the superhuman.
Yeah.
It is so intense.
You get so much information. It's overwhelming. Like, you get this entire gene map.
And yeah, the American.
What they have.
Everything.
And you're like, is this disease really? So I don't know. What if, like, if we were to have a baby, I wouldn't know all of those things. And I wouldn't care.
You get so much. Like, when you fall in love with someone, you don't know their full family history. And many times you don't even know what their parents are going to die of in the future. You don't know, like, all the, you know, you're still young, you're in love. As a straight couple, you get knocked up and you just go with it. But like, when you get everything handed to you and you know what grandpa died of and you know what this person had and you know that he had acne when he was 16, like your brain, like I really excluded someone because he had acne when he was 16. This is how crazy you get. Like, who didn't have acne when they were 16 years old?
I think we did it because the great-grandfather of someone had a heart issue. And we were like, oh, no, that's bad.
Yeah. And then we ended up going down the route of health. We thought it would be like finding someone who looked like you for the donor. And then it ended up, we were like, as long as they are
healthy.
Right. That's like my story. Sorry to keep chiming in with mine, but like when we were like waffling between donors and it was so hard and we couldn't make up our minds, we had also been like thinking, should we ask our friend if he wants to be a known donor? One night we were out to dinner trying to make this decision. And then we both had the realization, wait. He looks nothing like all of these things we're putting in for this anonymous donor. Like, he has none of these attributes, nothing to do, like, his family has medical stuff and he looks nothing like what we were looking for, and it didn't matter because we loved him, right? So then we were like, oh, okay, we're too crazy here, so let's just make a decision and go. But it's funny, you get boggled down with all the little things.
But yeah, we did make a decision finally.
Bought the vials.
And up to there, I was like, that's so smooth. Like, that was so easy. Like, you just pick it, you send the money, and then a bit of a nightmare started.
Yeah.
When they had to make the shipment to the UK. We have great things such as the NHS, but we also have a lot of bureaucracy on import.
Oh.
Well, it's not a lot of bureaucracy on import.
I think they changed it recently and they hadn't
informed
anyone. So we were getting emails saying that shipment had arrived at customs.
Oh, no.
And we couldn't get through to anyone.
And we kept calling our clinic.
And also the spam bank.
Trying
to get them to liaise.
Guys, spam is at custom.
It's going to die.
70 days.
The spam bank were worried. They were like, it's in a big nitrogen tanks. It's great. Right. It's going to be fine. They weren't even worried. A few RC emails being like, stop stressing.
It's going to be fine. And I think I was at the point being like, oh, that's going to be a fun story. When our baby's born, we're just going to tell them, you know, you were stuck at custom at some point. but it didn't go to plan. They managed to deliver it, but the entire sperm
was thawed
and unusable.
Oh my God.
In the small print, it said that if anything happened on delivery, you wouldn't get a refund.
No, that's bullshit. That's not okay.
So we were panicking.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, eight vials.
We only shipped four.
Yeah, because we didn't know when we're going to go again.
But still, that was smart. A lot of money.
Yeah, but you're paying for storage. You're paying for storage of the other vials that you bought at the bank, and then you bought the other four vials, which is at least $4,000, I'm assuming, plus shipping, which I can't imagine that was cheap. I would be livid and devastated. Yeah. Devastated.
I was stressed because, it did say in the small print that we wouldn't get a refund or anything. Fortunately, we spoke to them and they said that they'd take it higher. And we did get a refund, but they didn't
level it up
and they did, because we were able to get proof that it had got stopped at customs and they hadn't provided the correct forms.
Oh.
So it wasn't processed because we'd also had to pay the import. Was it import fee? The import tax.
Yeah,
what tax
was
it?
Import tax.
Was that expensive?
It was about a grand and a half, I think.
Yeah.
To import to the UK.
You don't think about that? You're not thinking about that when you're spending $5,000 to get it over here?
We were like, fine. But they said, we can refund you all of it. We can't refund you the import tax.
Oh, my God.
Ooh. By that point, we were a bit like, we lost a bit of faith. But we're like, maybe we are trying to, you know, it's too much of a trip.
And I had this feeling. I was like, this is fate. It's not the right donor.
So we asked to be refunded for everything, including the vials that they had there. So we're like, please, we appreciate everything that you've done, but I don't think that this is working for us. So if we can just get a refund, you keep whatever you have.
And they did?
They did.
That's good.
Yeah. We were really appreciative of that. So we got the full refund. To be fair, they didn't have any more vials of that donor. So, and I think if they'd had more vials, we wouldn't have been allowed to. But because they didn't have any more and we'd bought a certain amount, they didn't have the same MOT level, and we needed a certain MOT for IUI. They said you can have a refund, but you can't have a refund for the import tax.
You don't know where the mistake happened, but like I want to know so that we can prevent it in the future. It's so frustrating because it was all just, what is it, red tape, like ridiculous stuff. That's really frustrating.
And you might have to pay it when it arrives, but because we hadn't actually had it arrive, we definitely didn't need to pay it. So it might have just been a miscommunication of...
Yeah, and also like the time zone and the difference meant that we kept going back and forth and calls at weird times in the day and missing, you know, the right person to talk to. So it ended up being really long email chains that you might lose track of what's going on.
Oh my God. What a nightmare though. When you're just, when you start this process, you just want to get started, you know, like you've waited long enough and then what a nightmare to have to go through all that. Yeah. That is really frustrating and heartbreaking. So that sucks. But it sounds like the sperm bank worked with you.
They did. Yeah.
That's good.
I have to say they did work with us. It could have been so much worse.
Oh yeah. You could have been out $5,000 or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. And you had a bad feeling about that donor.
Exactly.
We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Oof, all this talk about sperm banks has got me thinking about my favorite sperm bank, California Cryobank, and I have a promo code for y'all. If y'all are in the same position as Sophie and Inyese and you're looking to build your family, you're going to use code LOVEISLOVE at cryobank.com for a free level 2 subscription to California Cryo's donor catalog. You can even use it for a discount on their level 3 subscription. And the thing about California Cryobank that I love so much is not only because I made my babies through them, which you all know, but also because they really are doing the work when it comes to the LGBTQIA community. They offer free vial transfer between partners. They offer to give you a second parent adoption letter if needed. And they do so many more things for our community. They are really walking the walk. So if you are ready to start this journey of baby making, California Cryobank is a great place to start. Just go to cryobank.com, use code LOVEISLOVE, and you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Do it now. Make those babies and then come tell me about them. I love y'all. I love ya.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone. Which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Love is love.
So you get refunded for the donor, for the sperm. And now where do you go? What do you do? Because now you're back at square one, it feels like.
Square one and 6-7 months in.
Yeah. Well, we were just so ready and we were so delayed now.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just getting older.
We were like trying to look somewhere closer because of all that debacle of getting towards.
Yeah. We were like, let's stay in Europe because then it's quicker to ship.
And again, that's another all entire ball game. So seems like, again, a lot of business-like sperm banks where you just need to pay a fee to see pictures. And then you wonder, is that even important? And then you do pay that fee and you see the picture as adults and you're like, thankfully,
that is important.
I do that. And
I know.
Axe murderers. they look really like cute babies and then they grow up and you're like, okay, I'll run away from you.
For me, pictures were a deal breaker. Like I needed to see, and I really did rule people out just based on how they looked. I also ruled people out based on their voices. I don't know if you got any voice recordings.
Yeah, we did. We did. I was ruling people out by, we wanted someone that would be well open to meeting the child when they were older. Mm-hmm. I thought for us, that was quite important just to know that that would be an acceptance, not a question.
Yeah. I don't know what you got, but like essays from the donor, artwork, all the things. And you just, you paid for the extra stuff and you were able to see everything. It is a business though, and it is a racket.
It is. I mean, there's so much I could talk forever about, like,
yeah,
sperm donor and needing more regulation.
You ended up picking someone that specifically wrote in the essay that they wanted to donate to, you know, help a family.
Yeah, queer family, I think it was.
That's who you went
with. Yeah, that's who we went with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just fit, I think, in a way that the other donor didn't. I was like, this is someone that might, because you don't know whether they're going to end up being part of your life in the future. You just don't know. And I wanted to have someone that I thought, as much as you can tell from a profile.
Yeah, definitely don't look Italian.
They definitely don't look Italian at all. They look more like me. It's like double me.
Yeah. That happens. You know what, though? You're each going to carry, so you're each going to have little carbon copies anyway. That's what happened with me. We each made a carbon copy of ourselves somehow.
Did you use the same donor?
Yeah. But, like, my friends are like, his genes must be, like, muted or something, because the two kids are like, you guys. But it's also because I think nobody else has seen the donor, except for a few family members that we've shown the donor's profile to. But nobody knows what this guy looks like. Nobody's seen him, nothing. And so when they look at our kids, all they can see is us. They can't see any resemblance to anyone else because they don't know what they're looking for. So I think in many instances, everybody always thinks that, you know, queer folks' kids look exactly like them. But not in every instance. Not in every instance. It really does depend on the donor and their genetics. So this worked out then.
Yeah. And then
it got nearly stuck at customs.
Did get stuck at customs again.
But you went European this time, but it still had to go through customs.
Brexit. The forms, have changed.
It managed to arrive, so that they did provide all the forms. It got to our hospital, and then we get a call from our hospital, our clinic, saying, it looks like the sperm has been delivered, but we don't know where it is.
Oh, my God.
It was just, by this point, I was like, you can't write this.
This point, we were driving to the hospital and I was there driving, being like, I'm going to get there. I'm going to go to the delivery, whatever they do deliveries. Yeah, I'm going to find it and I'm going to bring it up to the floor where we have to pin it. We got there and the sperm was there. So,
oh, okay.
That's fine.
Thanks for scaring us. Do you know our history? Come on, y'all. Yeah, that's crazy. So, okay, so it's there. You do IUI?
Yes, did two IUI. First round of IUI, that failed. It's all natural, no drugs or anything. Second round of IUI, that failed. And we had a most amazing fertility doctor. Who, shout out to Dr. White. She was fantastic.
Shout out. Go, Dr. White.
Yeah, she was the donor doctor. So she looked after all the patients that were using donors.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. So she knew her staff.
She'd just been like there for us every step of the way. Also, you know, advising us. I really need to know like percentages, probabilities, and I need to know that kind of detail to feel like this is what we're going to go for. And you need reassurance and you need to know. And she was able to give us the care that we needed. Oh, and at the same time, advise us on every time something happened, because what I feel with fertility is that when it doesn't go your way, when there's a failed test or something like this, all you want to know is what can I do to move forward?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the next step I can take? And she was always there on it with us, advising us on what the next step might be.
That's amazing. It really does take, you know, when you talk about doctors being inclusive and being there for the community, it really just takes an understanding doctor, like somebody with compassion and somebody who is really just taking your story into account when working with you and your journey. I think it can be really that simple. It doesn't have to be so complicated, right?
Yeah.
It's just paying attention to who's in front of you and trying to give them what they need. I don't know. Anne had a doctor's appointment for what she's dealing with right now. And I was so happy the doctor was asking her all this history. And she asked, how many kids do you have? And we're in there and two kids, blah, blah, blah. And she asked, which I really appreciated, how many pregnancies have you had?
Oh, yeah.
which I almost cried. Because I was like, thank you for understanding. Thank you that you didn't just assume she'd had two pregnancies. Thank you for getting it. Appreciate you. But it's just little tiny things, and it's not that hard to do. It really isn't.
So then she said that because I'd got blocked tubes, she was going to see if we could forfeit, not have to do the third IUI,
ooh,
which would obviously save us money. And she was, because I spoke to her after the second failed one. And obviously by this point, I think we were a year and a half. In from our first appointment with her, and it had taken so long because of all the sperm palaver. And so she said, that's it, I'm not going to quibble over two or three IUIs. I'm going to put you now, I'm going to push for funding for you for IVF.
Oh my God, I love her.
This is amazing. And yeah, she was like, wow, you've waited enough, it's been going through enough.
Aww.
And yeah, so we got funding then. She did that straight away. And we went in, signed the forms, got the funding, and got a round of IVF fully funded with three transfers.
There was a decision that we needed to make prior the egg collection. So without knowing anything of what you're going to do, it's still a rule that they're debating. Apparently,
it's just gone through, but it's not changed by the time we did IVF.
Okay. So you had to do, something had happened and it didn't work and we wanted to try and do reciprocal,
mm-hmm,
we would have to make that decision up front because Sophie would have to be genetically tested because she'd be considered an egg donor for me.
So it, the reason it came up was not because we were even discussing reciprocal. It's you have to tick, I don't know if you have to do the same, where you tick whether you'd want the other person to be able to use your embryos if you died.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And I wanted to tick yes, because I was like, of course I want Anyeze to use my embryos. And so therefore, you'd happily pass them over. But in order to tick that box, you have to do genetic testing.
Oh my God.
And over here, you have to do it privately and it's about $1,500. It's whether you carry the baby or I carry the baby. It's the same baby, but I had to be genetic tested.
Ugh. But did you have to do counseling or anything like that, because you would be potentially giving away your babies? I did that in quotations.
No, so we didn't have to do that. We had to do that for the donor. For the donor, we had to do the implications counseling, but not to do it. No. Luckily, not to do it between us.
Yeah,
that's good. At least
that was just for queer couples.
Yeah, you don't have to do it.
You don't have to do it, obviously, if you're a straight couple.
Oh,
so that's interesting. Like a, They called it the gay tax.
Yeah, gay tax.
Oh my
but
God.
That has just been changed. So recently sued their ICB.
Okay.
And so, and I wrote to the HFEA, I've got it written down there, I can never get the acronym right. And they were so vague. They wrote, because I was like, do I have to do this? And they wrote an email back saying, it's not a requirement. We've deprioritized it and let the clinics know, but it's up to them. And obviously, it's still in the law, so the clinics are still going to do it.
Right, yeah. You don't want to, yeah, and I understand that. That's frustrating, but it seems like it's changed now.
It's not gone through. It's supposed to be changing. This started going through 2 years ago, but you still have to pay for it right now.
Wow.
But it should go through at some point.
And they don't do it to non-queer couples because I guess, in essence, it's both of their genetics that are in the embryos. But it's still biased. Right.
Yeah. So, like, I think if she was donating eggs to me, it's like as if I'm accepting a donation.
It's as if I was an anonymous donor. I'm treated like an anonymous donor.
Yeah.
Even though.
Yeah.
But we decided to do it because we were like, do you know what? Actually, we don't know. I'd got quite a high AMH. So I thought I'd get quite a few embryos and we didn't know about. We just thought it's good to have
more.
It is. Trust me. It is.
After our journey, we were like, let's just do it.
Let's make as many as possible.
Some more options in general, like whatever happens.
So then what happened?
So that, we did the genetic testing. I still don't know. I'd never got the results. So who knows? Who knows what it's like?
It's fine.
Yeah. Never mind.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
I did for IVF, got 5 embryos, which was quite good. Did a fresh transfer and that failed. Just straight up negative.
Damn.
Test. Then I was gearing up for my second one, doing a medicated cycle, and I got injured, so I got a trapped nerve, which
in a hip,
in my hip.
But God,
it was agony, and I just couldn't. I had to go in for like one of my scans, and just I was like sobbing, can't do this.
And you don't want to get pregnant with, like, you already get sciatica and other things, and like, not that having something else that adds on top of it. And you were really struggling. You were in much pain. And
I've never experienced pain like it. It was, yeah, it was something else.
And I remember it was one night, she was in so much pain and she couldn't sleep. And we were a bit desperate, didn't know what to do. Like, we wanted still to prioritize this journey. And, you know, it's all about trying.
And it was going to be a good 6 month, well, a good couple of months of recovery for me to do it again.
It's almost 2 years now and you've only been able to try two times.
Yeah.
Right? So well, I can't imagine.
Because, IUI, two IUIs and one IVF.
Right, three times, yeah.
Yeah, but in 2 years, it's not much.
Yeah, that's tough.
So I had a brilliant idea of saying, well, I'll do it then.
You weren't up for reciprocal straight away, and then
it was more like you always wanted to carry,
yeah,
and you wanted to do it before a certain age. But I just thought, like, yeah, I think it's just a bit of a trying game. We just need to keep going.
And I was
we
so
need
grateful.
To keep trying. And although you had, when you get funded for IVF, you get funded for one cycle and two tries.
Yeah, one cycle with a fresh transfer and two more.
And two more
frozen.
Even so, if you have more embryos?
Yeah. Well, it depends where you live. So sometimes in some areas, if you're in a different postcode, you get three rounds of IVF.
It's complicated. It's very complicated. But like, good on them for at least funding a good portion of it.
Yeah.
But still, like, oh God, that one scraggly embryo just has to wait. We're going to have to, raise some money here. But yeah. Okay, so because you have two embryos and you have the option, you decided to use your other embryo. I mean, not your embryo. I mean, your uterus. You have two uteruses. Yeah. And you had the option, so you decided to use the other uterus, which is a beautiful thing between queer couples.
Yeah.
And I think you were so relieved.
I was so relieved because you'd said originally you didn't know whether you wanted to do IVF because it's a lot of drugs and it's a lot if it's not needed. And so, yeah, when you said that, I was just so grateful. Like, oh my gosh, we can keep going. My body can have a break.
Can I pause you here and talk a little bit about the genetic tie? Because I'm sure there's some layers in here. You said you've always wanted to carry and you've always wanted a family. Was a genetic tie important? Or like, was this a jump for you to say, I'll carry yours?
Not really. It's more, I was worried at that point in time that, I don't know, I was going to take away something from you. Because I was always, as I said, the next one is going to be my genetic. Still need to make that.
Yeah, you've never really been
fussed. I've never been fussed about it. Like, I'm not worried or fussed right now to that baby's mine. So no matter which genetics.
Exactly. Yeah. The babies are going to be yours no matter whose genetics they have. And sometimes some of us get crazy, like yours truly.
It's a want for sure, having in the future, but also now with everything that has happened, I'll only give myself a certain amount of attempts before calling it quits.
Right, because we haven't gotten through the next part of your story, but I do know that, Sophie, you did have some emotions. Oh, well, let's just go into the story and then I think it'll all come out. So I know it from the email.
We went ahead. At this point, Dr. White was, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to throw everything at it? We've been here for a long time. We really want this baby to happen for you guys. And she was like, you don't really, because I was going to do it. We don't know if you need all this medication, but of course it's going to make it more likely.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me percentages.
And I had
again.
Quite a lot of medication left over from my council cycle
that
was funded. Yeah. So we were able to use some of that, obviously. And then so this cycle wasn't funded. Because it was Agnese going, so we had to pay for it, which is understandable. I totally get that.
It was our choice.
It was our choice.
How much does an IVF cycle cost in the UK?
I think for a full cycle plus a transfer is around £8,000 privately. For a frozen embryo transfer, where we were, was £1,500 just for a transfer. Oh, Frozen my God.
I don't know why I live here. I don't know.
It, that is American prices.
Significantly cheaper. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The medication is about another £1,000.
Yeah, about another £1,000. But we had some, because I had not got to my progesterone injections or anything. So we had quite a lot of medication left that we were able to.
It's great. It was an option and you were able to do it. But like in the States, you know, the IVF, the first one is 12 to 15,000. And then each subsequent one, if I'm remembering correctly, was like 7 to 10,000.
Wow.
Each transfer.
Each transfer?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That is.
If I'm remembering correctly, this was a while ago, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, luckily or sadly, we didn't really have eggs left over after like one transfer each. But anyway, so we couldn't like pay for the next one. But anyway, okay, so you're going forward. You got the medication and
I got pregnant.
Yay.
Yeah, that was, it was a bit funny because I never felt so sick ever in my life. And I was 3 days post transfer and I work in central London and I take a train right in and it is one of the busiest trains that you can get into. And I was standing there being like force moved around and all of a sudden I was like, I'm just gonna be sick. This is gonna be awful.
Yeah.
And I kept calling you and complaining and moaning about it. You're pregnant. And I was adamant I didn't want to test up to test day. So, you know, normally it's a week, 10 days afterwards, so you need to test. Mm-hmm. And she kept being there.
I was like, you don't want to test.
Look, I just bought a test.
I just
knew. I was like, I've got a feeling.
And I remember that day, you know, we were a bit like, it was raining, we're in the UK and we're a bit under the weather in terms of emotion. I was like, oh, I'll cheer us up. Let's do this test. And it was positive. And Yay. Then we went completely.
Then we went a bit completely crazy and spent so much on tests.
Yeah, we just kept buying tests.
You just kept testing because you were like, wait. Oh, that's so funny. Congrats. Congratulations.
And it was really exciting. I think I had quite a lot of feelings actually, because I think we'd whirlwinded into this reciprocal, which is actually something I've always wanted to do. But I didn't realize I'd have feelings of like feeling like a failure when it's not you carrying and you've tried. Yeah. And so I had like such conflicted feelings over parenthood and how being a mum is. Yeah, it was a very strange feeling to have because I wasn't anticipating feeling like that.
Right. And you can't really tell your spouse those feelings when she's like newly pregnant. And then I'm sure, and Yase, you were having feelings too of like, oh God, you know, this was supposed to be her and here I am, the pregnant one. You know, there's a lot of layers to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk a lot sometimes.
Yeah,
we talk too much.
Too much. Yeah, we did talk
so
about it.
Sometimes I think there are some feelings and some thoughts you keep for yourself. But so we talked in depth about it and you explained it to me. At first I was like, I'm sorry I did this for us, but then I was like, it's something personal. Yeah. And it's something I try to understand a bit better. And then I got to grips with it.
We're both in therapy, so
yes.
Yeah, therapy.
Talk about it separate, then come together.
And I just understood.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, as long as you know that this is a journey that we both are into. And, you know, the next baby is going to be as important as this one. And I'll make little jokes being like, you know, I'm going to go through all of this. I'm going to give birth to a baby that's going to look nothing like me. And then you're going to look amazing there.
Yeah, that's when you get to be like, when people get to be like, oh, my God, you just gave birth. You look great. I did that. I was like, thank you. Thank you. I know. I don't know. It's just, you know, must be something in my genetics.
Yeah. So I tried to cheer you up.
Yeah, and I think I got, it was a fleeting feeling. And I was so grateful for what Anyase was doing, because it's not an being pregnant isn't an easy task, let alone taking it on and doing what you did. But I think it really made me feel like we were doing it together, which I think I hadn't felt like that before. But when it's, you're just the one going through it all and doing all of the injections and everything. Mm-hmm. I did feel like, oh, wow, we're a real team. which was wonderful.
I think the beauty of it too is you get to see it from both sides. You got a both side point of view just in the one creation. And I know the story doesn't end here. So I think that's one of the beautiful things about queer folks in general and queer families is a lot of times we each get to experience the things that in non-queer families, only one side gets to experience, and that's how it goes, right? So
yeah, actually that's so true, because I think I had understanding what you'd been going through for the last couple of however long we had been, it is actually really hard being on the other side of being supportive and worrying about, you know, worrying about you and making sure you're all right. And I don't think I'd realized how difficult your role had been. Yeah. So it was actually really great to be like, yeah, no, thank you. You smashed it for the last couple of
Queer couples for the win. Yes. So, okay. So take us down the path.
So we got
8 weeks.
Well, we got 8 weeks, but the embryo got to 6.5 weeks of life, and then
you went for your first
heart
scan.
Stopped beating,
and there was no heartbeat.
Oh God, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like a series of things that I was so anxious. I'm not an anxious person. I'm like as laid back. I could be laying down. Like it's normally nothing really phases me. And I've been writing in a little diary every day. And if I read back that diary, I was so anxious. Everything was, oh my God, I don't know if things are going well or not. I just think like inside you kind of know that something might not be okay. Or I don't know, I might be anxious next time as well. I have no idea. So I had, that's TMI, but I had a little bleed.
Not TMI.
And we went to do a private scan because the scan that we had with the clinic was a couple of days afterwards.
We rang the clinic and they said, don't worry about coming in for a scan. But you were so anxious.
Mm. And we were like, they were like, don't worry. As long as you're not bleeding too much, it's fine. And it's because they can't do anything, right? So if it's gone badly, it's gone badly. So, but we wanted to know. So we went to a private clinic. And yeah, they did the scan and I was there and the first thing I did, I was like, oh, I can see the embryo. And she knew.
Yeah, I saw that there was no heartbeat and I knew. And it was, hard because the embryo wasn't measuring big enough for it to be classed as a miscarriage yet.
Oh.
You have to wait for...
So yeah, so if it's above 7 weeks and with no heartbeat, then they can help you and give you medication to make it pass quicker.
Uh-huh.
But because it was 6 weeks, I went into the hospital for the scan, they told me, well, miracles can happen. And in 2 weeks, you know, we're going to do another scan in a week because, and I knew it wasn't. Like by that point, it had started, the miscarriages probably started.
Yeah.
So it was just, I felt it would be a bit cruel.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I really want this to
be done.
And on top of that, my brother was getting married.
Oh, yeah.
And we had planned to go to the wedding in Sicily. And this happened on that week.
So we couldn't go.
Of course, I was told that you can't fly because you're at risk of hemorrhage. And but yeah, that was hard. There's no.
That was hard.
Great week. Yeah.
I mean, what a whirlwind! You thrust yourself into the IVF and it, like, what a whirlwind! Just so much, so suddenly. So I'm sorry.
I think you don't realize how common it is.
Because no one talks about it.
Right. And it's important to talk about. Yeah. And it's important to know these things. Like what you just said, I had no idea. You know, and it varies from country to country how they handle uterine health care. For you to feel like anyone is being heartless in this moment particularly is a real tragedy. Like that shouldn't happen. So I feel like there needs to be an overhaul of how we handle people who are going through this tragedy in their lives. It's not okay that you didn't feel supported or cared for. Like, that makes me so angry. Ugh.
What happened, and I think a bit the glimpse of hope and will now help me, as well as therapy, of course, to go through it, is that, and maybe we're absolutely mad.
We are.
But the day that I was going into the clinic to confirm that a miscarriage had happened, and, you know, everything had happened, we had an appointment as well with our doctor, Dr. White. But the morning, we always have this realization in the morning where always. I just remember this specific moment. We were having
I'm
a morning
sensing
conference.
A last minute decision type vibe.
Oh, spontaneity.
Spontaneity.
It's like when we got engaged, it was spontaneous.
We were sitting on our sofa having a morning coffee, and I was there a bit feeling sorry for myself. And then Sophie just walked into the room. She was like, "Oh, my period just started," and I was like, "Well, then you should try."
And I was like, "Really?" Because I thought you'd want. I thought Anyaze would want to go again, and I was like, "I want to give her as much chances." I was like ready. Right. I was like, this is your go. This is.
I know, it was absolutely like the moment I said it, I was like, am I being a bit crazy? Is it? I don't know. But the moment I said it and she said, yeah, I felt better.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. I just felt so much better. I just felt like I had not given up hope. Because what it felt to me was just, again, it was time that we had to wait for.
Yeah.
Because after a miscarriage, you need to wait a couple of months before you can try again. And by this point, we are two and a half years in. And
yeah, you've waited long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love that, because I just love that you're in this hopeless place, this very sad, terrible place after a miscarriage. And then in a moment, hope can come back because you're in a lesbian relationship and you can switch uteruses.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that.
So we walked into our doctor's office and I think she must think we're mad. And I was like, so can I go next then? She was like, do you think it would help you? We were like, yeah. You said, because it was more about you.
She was the person that had the most sympathy for me. Yeah. Straight away, she made sure I was okay. She said, just know that it's a success because you can carry a baby.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to see it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can carry, you know, she just went again on her percentage story, saying that, you know, those things happen, likely, you know, could be genetic issues, your body knows, but you got pregnant, so you are going to be able to get pregnant again. So that was really helpful. And then she was like, if you're really sure, go ahead.
So she rushed it all through, because obviously it needed to happen right away.
Yeah.
Rushed everything through. This was a funded cycle, so we didn't have to pay for it. We were very fortunate. And she got all the drugs delivered, so the drugs were all included. Uh-huh. And I kind of didn't have time to think about it at this point.
I think that's the best way.
I had quite a bit of anxiety when I, like, previously about carrying with all the pain that I'd had, but didn't have time to think about that. Just went for it and went for the transfer, which all went well. And then, yeah, I got pregnant. And it was a bit of, I still can't believe it.
I know. You won't believe it till that baby's in your arms. And then it's going to be like, oh my God, what did we do? But right now, and just enjoy it. Like, what a lesbian whirlwind you went through. This is so lesbian. We're just going to switch. We're just going to switch back. We're just going to switch. Yeah. That's amazing. My uterus is your uterus. Like, this is how we do. Oh my God, I love it. How do you feel now? I mean, did you have any emotions when Sophie got pregnant, Anyaze? And
I think there's always going to be like being sad about, you know, something that could have been. I always described it to you, and I know it probably is weird, but it's like a breakup, because it's not sadness about something you know, someone you know, but it's sadness about what could have been and what you imagine in those 6 weeks, and you make up in your head to meet this little person that's inside of you, and then that goes away. And that's how it feels. It's like, it's just, that's never, it's an avenue, it's a future that we're never going to have.
Yeah.
But you know, every day it's something weird that happens. And I think all us women are really resilient in that sense. One day you just wake up and you feel better. One day you just wake up. I mean, she was also pregnant, so she was feeling very had morning sickness. And I was like, you know what? The sun is going to rise tomorrow. I'm fine.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. And I think that you sharing your story and and your anecdotes there is going to give a lot of people hope and help and comfort, because it's not easy. This is what I say all the time. This baby making journey is not easy, especially if you're an L, a G, a B, a T, a Q, a I, a A, a plus, a plus, a plus. Like,
yeah,
it's not going to be easy. If it's easy, you're super lucky. More often than not, it's going to be a road and you're going to get through it together, which looks like you two came out stronger than ever for it. So that's exciting.
I do think so. And I feel like with this baby, it could have gone into either of us. I feel like it's so much ours. It's, which in a way I think is what that loss gave us. It gave us this real joint sense of joint, I don't know, shared journey.
Yeah. What a beautiful, I mean, what a way to make a rainbow out of rain here, right? You know, you went through a tough journey to get to this place where you really have gained something beautiful from it. There's something very profound about it that I'm not hitting the nail on the head with, but there's something very beautiful about this. And I love your story. I really do. I'm very excited for you to be moms.
Oh, we are too.
Yeah, you're halfway there. You just got to get through the next half. And then, oh my God. So you have to keep me posted, and the listeners, now you're part of the queer family squad. And I want to know when the baby comes, and I want to see, and I mean, I don't have to share it with everybody, but I'm invested now. So that's so exciting.
Sorry, Rainbow wanted to join.
I love Rainbow. Rainbow came up when I said Rainbow. I don't know if that happened. I just made that up. But.
She wants dinner. That's what she wants.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's late for you. You need to watch some TV and go to bed. And I need to get to my sick kids. But this has been fantastic. And you've given me hope. So I can only imagine that the listeners are going to feel uplifted by your story. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge, huge thank you once again to California Cryobank for sponsoring this here little show for an entire year of episodes. Go to cryobank.com, use code LOVEISLOVE, and get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Go do it. Let's make those babies and uplift these queer families, y'all. Thank you.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.